Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the new episode of the Calcio Land Podcast. And man, we've been saying this a lot, but the Calcio gods have been really good to this podcast. There's never an absence of great storylines to talk about. So we have a lot planned for you today. We, of course, have the last weekend in Serie A. We're going to cover quite a bit the match between Lazio and Inter. Sprinkled in all that, there's going to be some Easter eggs for all you Milinkovic-Savic fanatics. We're going to get into your fantastic Twitter questions. We got a lot of transfer stuff on these. We're going to have 1,000 names live on the podcast to make his game picks, and we're going to close the show with a great interview with our friend Sean McIntosh of Texas Laziale to get a Lazio perspective on this big match. And for those of you, again, into Milinkovic-Savic, at the end of the podcast, he's going to give you some great details on the past month for him. But before we get to all that, we cannot ignore all the craziness going on with Gigi Buffon. So for those of you that have kind of lost track, I was telling Alex before we got started, it feels like almost 2 weeks ago that Buffon did his big press conference this morning to announce it would be his last match at Juve. I think everyone saw this as more an announcement of his retirement. But no, it sounds like Buffon will continue playing, and it could likely be at PSG. So for those of you that haven't been following what's going on Twitter, today even Di Marzio this afternoon posted that PSG is making Buffon a 2-year offer, and he's leaning at the moment, it could change because he's taken a few days to think about his future, is leaning towards potentially accepting it. So what a roller coaster. So I wanted to ask you, Alex, what's your reaction from all this?
I think it makes perfect sense, David. I really do, because PSG and Buffon are both looking for the same thing, and that's a Champions League trophy. Buffon, of course, that's the one thing missing from his cabinet, and PSG, that's the only thing they care about, David. I mean, sure, they're going to win Ligue 1 no matter what, especially with the squad they have. I know Monaco had success recently, but it's PSG's to lose every year in Ligue 1. So they could get anybody. They could get me, and they might win the Ligue 1 title. But to get someone like Gigi Buffon, who is such a veteran, such a leader, that's exactly what PSG is missing. I really rate a player, Thiago Silva, one of the best center backs in the world, but he's kind of a quiet leader. And then, of course, they have Neymar and Cavani, all these very talented players. But I get there's something missing with PSG when I think about them, and that's heart. That is an actual identity, and I think Buffon would be so appropriate for PSG. He doesn't have a lot left. They just care about winning that Champions League. He would give it all. I'm sure he wouldn't be a goalkeeper every game since they're going to be in a lot of competitions, but Thomas Tuchel just hired there. Tuchel's 44 years old. Buffon is 40. I mean, it's almost perfect for Tuchel. You know what I mean? It's perfect for Tuchel in a way. He almost has a second coach on his side. If someone like Marco Verratti, David, stays, who is a little bit lost these days, I think Buffon would be the perfect person to maybe put his arm around Verratti and just make him feel a little bit more comfortable or confident. I'm clearly very pro Buffon being on PSG because I feel like that's what PSG has been missing. They are designed to win the Champions League, and they haven't been able to. And I just feel like Buffon, the plus for him is, oh, I'm going to a team that is built every year to at least go far in the tournament. They have money on money on money. They are going to have another tremendous squad next year. And then PSG is looking at it like, oh, we'll get a good goalkeeper. And if he's a little bit off and if he's not the Buffon we know Gigi Buffon to be, well, at least we're getting a leader. And then kind of the last part of it, and I'm saving him for last because who knows what's happening with Neymar. You know, different report every day regarding Neymar. But if Neymar is there next year, I think Buffon would be great for him. I'm not saying Neymar didn't have guidance when he was at Barcelona. Of course, that team was stacked with veterans and Xavi and Iniesta. But Neymar's got some immaturity still to him, and I think Buffon, once again, might be a great presence around someone like Neymar. I think it would be a perfect, perfect marriage. So I'm very pro it, David, clearly. What are your thoughts?
So I'm so glad, Alex, we have someone like you, and you become more of a Serie A aficionado. You're becoming an expert on the league, but I really love that you have a broader perspective. So a very interesting take there. I obviously look at it a little bit from a different perspective, but it's interesting to see what you have to say. So I have to be honest, this I was getting ready for the podcast. I had this long rant ready without this news on PSG. So I had to make some adjustments. So let's start with the PSG aspect. I've been saying it all season. To me, Buffon did not look like a player that had to retire. I know every time he made a mistake, it was very easy for fans to say, look, he's old, he should just hang it up. But guess what? Even keepers as good as Handanovic, who's considerably younger than Buffon, makes mistakes. He's made some mistakes in big matches against Juve. Not to mention Donnarumma, who's half Gigi's age. He's made a lot of mistakes this season. So to me, it was kind of like a false narrative. To me, Buffon looked like still a very good keeper. Is it vintage Buffon? No. But for me, still a way above average keeper. Not the best in the world, but definitely a keeper good enough for a top club. So to me, he didn't look like someone that should retire. So I'm not that surprised that he wants to keep going. The PSG thing makes a lot of sense for the reason that you mentioned. But from the Juve perspective, I have to imagine for Juve fans, this is really a tough pill to swallow. Not only Buffon retiring, you know, you go on the assumption he's going to retire, he's going to leave, but now odds are there's a very good chance we'll see him on another club. And the first thing that I thought with this, with the press conference, it really was reminiscent of Del Piero a few years ago. I'm not saying Juve pushed him out the door, but Juve pushed him out the door, and it almost feel like this is the same with Buffon. I think a lot of Juve fans would like Juve to be as ruthless with their legend, saying, okay, now it's time for you to go. I would imagine a lot of Juve fans would like Juve to be as ruthless with players in their prime. We hear all the time, Juve, the players will, if he wants to go, he can go. Maybe try to be a little bit more ruthless with the Vidals, the Pogbas of the world, like the top players that the team could really use. So that was my reaction to that. To me, from my perspective, if there's disappointment that Buffon's going to be wearing another jersey, I would probably direct that a little bit more at the club than Buffon. Of course, Buffon said all the right things. You wouldn't expect anything less. He said, look, I could stay here next season and essentially be a backup to Szczesny, and there'd be this huge shadow over Szczesny. I can kind of see a little bit about that, but Szczesny played a good amount of matches this season. To me, it's not totally far-fetched to see them maybe reverse it with Szczesny playing more matches. So a lot to digest. This is my reaction to this. I'm sure we'll discuss this more. But I want to go into a little bit more the reaction of Buffon, because he's leaving Serie A. So the reactions that I read on Twitter this morning, my gut reaction was right away when I saw so many fans of other teams trashing Buffon on his last day. Was my usual thing. It's like, you know, we should just appreciate greatness more. There's plenty of Juve fans that don't appreciate Totti. There's plenty of Juve fans that have mocked Napoli and Sarri and their way of playing. But maybe, you know, we can admire just something. And Totti's definitely more great than Napoli, don't get me wrong. But sometimes, you know, I feel like fandom, the downside of it is you don't appreciate enough, you know, someone that doesn't play for your team. But, you know, the way this was being perceived this morning, this press conference, really made me think of this stupid little thing on Twitter. You probably heard about it, Alex. I'm sure a lot of our listeners did. This audio thing, is it Laurel or Yanni? Like, people hear the same thing in completely a different way. And that made me think a lot of Buffon's retirement. Like, we perceive things in radically different ways based on our biases. And that's really what I thought when I saw that. You know, from one perspective, I would think neutral fans should probably really appreciate the fact that Buffon went to Serie B for Juve after winning a World Cup. I see a lot of criticism of Buffon being a hypocrite, not being a good sportsman because of the Gol di Muntari thing. But then I'd like to ask anyone that's so angry at Buffon for the Gol di Muntari to give me an example in a big moment where a player told the referee, hey, you made a mistake that benefited my team. This is not the way it should be. I can't think of it. I could be very wrong. If there is, please let me know. I can think of one time that Klose told the referee, you made a mistake, that didn't happen. But it wasn't in a huge moment. So if you want to hold the goal di Muntari against Buffon, give me an example where a player did that in a bigger moment. On the flip side, there's also a lot of hypocrisy with Buffon's reaction after the Real Madrid match with the referee. I don't want to like get into it too much. I feel like a lot of Juve fans, it was a knee-jerk thing to defend Buffon completely on it. And to me, in a lot of ways, it was indefensible because Buffon is the first one to say that in Italy, people use the referees to not give enough credit to Juve. To give some credit to Buffon this morning in the press conference, he did say that he would accept the suspension from UEFA, no questions asked, because he went too far in the post-match. But I found the knee-jerk reaction of Juve fans to be a little bit too much. So again, it's the Laurel and Yanni thing. It's kind of how you perceive it based on your biases. I would never judge someone on their worst moment, and I think a little bit too much was made about Buffon on the Real Madrid match. It made me think, too, a lot of the people that hate on Buffon is a phrase that I think about a lot. There's a saying that in Italy, people will forgive everything except for success. And I think there's been a lot of vitriol sent at Buffon because in the past 7 years, Juve has won a lot at a time that Milan and Inter have struggled. So I really think there's a lot of extra vitriol. I think, you know, had those teams been more competitive, Juve not win as much, maybe people would look at it differently. I'm a big believer that one of the main reasons Milan fans hate Pirlo so much, not all Milan fans, but a lot of them, is because he was a very successful at Juve. Had he gone at Juve and struggled, I don't think people would be talking about that. The last thing I want to say on the subject is really the Buffon thing to me has a very dark night thing to it. You know, you hang around long enough, instead of being the hero, you become the villain. I'm thinking, like, how different would Buffon's legacy be right now? Say he had retired before Conte arrived. There was a season where he had back problems. Juve brought in Storari from Sampdoria as insurance because they weren't even really sure if Buffon could keep going. This was before Conte. So just imagine how differently we'd perceive Buffon had he retired then. And now there's this whole new layer on the PSG aspect. So just there's so much going on with Buffon. I could go on and on and on. The last thing I'll say for Juve fans, because I think today they're already bummed out that Buffon is leaving, was leaving the club. Now they find out he could possibly be playing on another team. The silver lining is, I'll tell you, if you look at Juve's history, they did have a legendary keeper. I'm old enough to remember Dino Zoff. Dino Zoff was Buffon before there was Buffon. When I was a kid and I was a keeper growing up, the idea that there would be a better keeper ever than Dino Zoff was absolutely far-fetched. Then Buffon came along. But the one thing about Dino Zoff is Juve won their first Champions League 2 years after he retired with his successor in goal, Stefano Tacconi, who was a very good keeper. I'm not sure if he's better than Szczesny is today. So maybe history will repeat itself, and hey, maybe Juve could win a Champions League final against PSG with Buffon in goal. Imagine if it ends that way. And with that, I'm out. But remember, Laurel and Yanni, we all perceive things in radically different ways based on their biases, but I do think it would be good to give credit to Buffon, because guess what? If you're a Calcio fan, no matter how you remember Buffon, one thing is for certain, you will remember Buffon. So I'm very, very, very excited that for the last time for this season, we're going to make our game picks with our dear friend Thousand Names. After his first appearance on the podcast 2 weeks ago, he's been eager to get back on, and I'm thrilled to have him. We're going to pick three games for the upcoming weekend, wrap up a great season with his predictions. He sent them to me ahead of time, and boy, do we have some good ones. So as usual today, what you're going to hear is you're going to hear Thousand's picks in Italian. I'm going to read them in English right after, and then I'll make my picks. He's got some really good ones. Caro amico Thousand, bentornato a Calcioland. È davvero un piacere averti stasera.
Il piacere è mio.
Okay, Thousand. Allora, let's start with the big match of the weekend. Everyone's really excited to find out what's going to happen between Lazio and Inter. Allora, dacci il tuo pronostico per il big match di questo fine settimana. Cosa pensi che succederà con Lazio-Inter?
Lazio-Inter 0-1. Gol di Candreva. I grandi campioni si vedono nei momenti decisivi. Sant'Antonio regalò la Champions segnando il primo gol stagionale contro la sua ex squadra. Simone Inzaghi triplete, ha fallito tutti gli obiettivi. Allenatore sopravvalutato. Desai a fine partita festeggia fuoco i futuri compagni. Fidatevi.
Bold prediction. So Thousand thinks Inter is going to win 1-0 at a packed Olympico with a goal by Candreva because great champions show their worth in the decisive moments. Sant'Antonio Candreva is going to give the Champions League to his team with his first goal of the season against his former team. Simone Inzaghi gets his triplet. He fails in all three objectives. He's an overrated coach, and at the end of the match, De Vrij is going to celebrate with his future teammates. Thousand came out strong on this, and you know, Lazio has a lot of injuries in this match, so I'm going to agree with him. I'm going to be bold. I'm going to have Inter winning this as well. I'm not going to go crazy and pick Candreva. I'm going to say Icardi is going to score 1-0. So we agree with this one, Thousand. Prossima partita, Napoli che chiude la stagione in casa col Crotone. Qual è il tuo pronostico, amico?
Napoli-Crotone 2-0. Insigne Callejon. San Paolo in lacrime per una stagione da record. Il Napoli ha vinto lo scudetto dell'onestà. Venga in B per colpa di biscotti degli altri campi. Merita una B l'anno prossimo.
So Thousand has Napoli beating Crotone 2-0, 2-0 goals by Insigne and Callejon. He says the San Paolo is going to be in tears to celebrate a record-breaking season. Napoli ends up winning the Scudetto of the Honesty. Zenga is going to end up in Serie B because of matches being fixed on the other pitches, and next season he deserves a big club. So Crotone, big, big match for them. They are in the race to avoid relegation with a bunch of other teams. Napoli at this point are just going to break the ceiling of 90 points. So this is an exciting match. This is a big game for Crotone. I'm going to give it as a draw. I'm going to have it as 1-1. I'm going to go with a goal by Simeone and a goal from Milik off the bench. So Thousand's last prediction of the season. We're going to close it with Milan. Milan plays at home against Fiorentina with a Europa League game at stake. Allora, Thousand, pronostico Milan-Fiorentina.
Milan-Fiorentina 1-0. Bonucci. Milan in Europa League in attesa della multa dell'UEFA. Stagione fallimentare. Il rinnovo di Gattuso è il colpo di grazia al futuro disastroso che li attende. Che godaccia anche l'anno prossimo. Fidatevi.
Wow, so this is kind of a bittersweet win for Milan. So Thousand has it 1-0, goal by Bonucci. Milan's going to end up in the Europa League, but they're going to have to wait to find out what UEFA's ruling is going to be on their financial fair play. Even with their Europa League, you have to consider this a disastrous season. And Gattuso extension is the coup de grace on a disastrous future that awaits Milan. It's going to be very tough next season. Sgodazza is one of your trademarks. I love it. Okay, I'm going to agree with him. Fiorentina's been struggling recently. I'm going to go with Milan-Fiorentina 2-0, and I'm going to go with Cutrone and Suso to end the season. So Thousand, voglio ringraziarti, i tuoi pronostici sono stati fantastici questa stagione. Se sei interessato, noi ti aspettiamo anche l'anno prossimo e ci divertiremo di nuovo. Grazie mille e saluta i nostri ascoltatori di Calcioland che adorano i tuoi pronostici.
Spero di poter partecipare ai futuri podcast dell'anno prossimo. Un saluto a tutti i follower. Buona serata.
So I guess summer must be coming because the questions that we get, and you guys can send them in with the CalcioLand hashtag, have more and more to do with transfers. So tonight we're going to give the people what they want. The vast majority of the questions tonight are transfer related. We got some great ones, so I want to thank all our listeners who send them in. Again, we're going to keep doing these podcasts. If you have a questions on transfers, Serie A, we also take them on music, movies, and films. Send them in using the CalcioLand hashtag. So, Alex, which ones are we going to go over tonight?
All right, I promise I do not order these, but David, can you confirm the recent reports of Alexandro's transfer to Manchester United? And should the deal be completed, what can be expected from him in the Premier League?
Alexandro, he must be one of the most mentioned players in the history of CalcioLand. So another summer begins, and here we are with Alexandro. So I have a lot of thoughts on this. So let's begin by saying that so far on Di Marzio's site, we haven't covered anything on Alexandro. It was very interesting yesterday to see kind of how the news was being discussed on Twitter. I saw a lot of people reference La Stampa, which is the newspaper in Turin, who's partly owned by the same group that owns Fiat, having this report on Alexandro. So I went on La Stampa to look at it, and the report was behind the paywall, so you had to pay to be on it. I did read some kind, so I wasn't able to read exactly what they wrote. I was just very curious because a lot of people were sourcing it from there. I did see some people were also saying that La Stampa was just referencing what was being said in England. So I find we really live in a completely new world for transfers. Very, very different. People are really rushing to give out news. We have a lot of news aggregators, sites that's all they do is they take news from other sources. We have people on Twitter who love to get retweets and put news on there, and it's just very hard to see where the news actually is coming from. So with that long rant, I don't have any updates on Alexandro quite yet. Those of you that have been following the podcast for a while and know me know that one constant with Juve is there's usually never a big sale or a big departure unless it's something like Buffon and Del Piero, something known that's really coming that happens before the season ticket campaign ends. Even those that remember when Conte abruptly left the club, guess what? It happened the day after the season ticket campaign closed. It's around mid-July. But the question is Alexandro still good enough that Juve would say, you know what, we don't want any of this news to leak. We're not going to announce anything, because the difference in Alexandro from this time last year to now is radically different. He just has not been the same player. Now, it's very possible that he was distracted, maybe was interested in leaving last summer. I will say it's significant that Juve didn't extend his contract. So there is, you know, pretty decent chance that he leaves this summer. So long and short of it, as of now, I don't have any news on it, but just beware of what you read on Twitter. This is a reminder that this time of year, people put all sorts of nonsense on Twitter accounts and say that Di Marzio said this, Di Marzio said that. My recommendation is always go to the site, look. We try to keep the English site as updated as quickly as possible, but if you want to be 100% certain, even look at the Italian site, see if there's something there. If something's attributed to Di Marzio, trust me, it will be on the site, and don't take as the gospel something that you read on Twitter.
And Man U fans, yeah, he had a down year. I'm his biggest fan, and I can even admit that. You would be getting a dynamite player. And in my opinion, he would be the best left back in the Premier League. And also, David, it does help. He's not going to the World Cup, most likely, unless there are injuries. So there should be no excuse. He should be fresh for August. He should be determined. If he really is on a new team, I think we'll see much more of the Alexandro from last year rather than this year. But let's stay on Manchester United. David, do you think Manchester United are the favorites to sign Milinkovic-Savic?
So look, I have a feeling we'll be talking about Milinkovic-Savic throughout the summer. If you're interested in getting the perspective of a Lazio fan, listen to the last segment of the podcast. He gave us some really good updates on the last month. His performance is the last month. So we haven't reported anything at all on Milinkovic-Savic on Di Marzio's site yet. I will tell you, you know, when people ask me, are Manchester United the favorites to sign him? You know, I can't say that they're the favorites, but they're certainly a club that checks all the boxes as a good destination for him. For one, they can print their own money. They can spend a ton of money. He's going to be super expensive, I think, at bare minimum, the transfer fee that Pogba went for. We've also seen Manchester United shop a lot in Italy. Maybe not the results haven't been that great, but we've had Darmian and Pogba on Manchester United. And finally, Lazio has a strong relationship with Jorge Mendes. Now, Mendes isn't officially Milinkovic-Savic agent. He isn't, but he's an intermediary in a lot of these big deals. So Manchester United has a great relationship with him. Lazio has developed a good relationship with him as well. It wouldn't surprise me if he's somehow involved with this transfer. So I will say, you know, I'm sure there'll be other rich clubs, and look out for PSG for Milinkovic-Savic as well. But if you're a Manchester United fan, you have to feel pretty good of the fact that at least your club checks all the boxes to get him.
All right, well, staying on that man, who would be a better fit for Man U between Jorginho and Milinkovic-Savic?
So they're very different players. Jorginho is more of a Carrick-type player. So for Manchester United fans, you're really getting the Carrick 2.0. I haven't watched a ton of Carrick throughout the years, but Jorginho is really, really good and a player in that mold. I know there's a lot of comparisons between Milinkovic-Savic and Pogba. Hell, I've made that many times. I do think they could play together. It's also not out of the question that maybe Pogba moves on, but if they were on the team together, I could see that fitting as well. The thing that really stands out to me about Milinkovic-Savic is really his versatility. At the beginning of the season, when Felipe Anderson was struggling and before Luis Alberto fully exploded, Lazio used Milinkovic-Savic in a more advanced position. He's also played closer to the defense. So pretty, you know, versatile player. Definitely not, though, like a regista, deep-lying playmaker like Jorginho, but definitely a very dynamic player that can go play a little bit elsewhere. I think in a lot of ways, maybe Jorginho more natural fit with Matic and Pogba, but maybe that changes. But ultimately, I think Milinkovic-Savic can really fit in anywhere.
And hey, Man U is no stranger to having Serbian stalwarts. They had Nemanja Vidic. Now, as you said, they have Nemanja Matic. So come on in, Milinkovic-Savic. All right, David, this one, it's giving you a lot of credit and a lot of pressure to come up with the next one. Since you were one of the first to talk about Milinkovic-Savic, who is the next superstar in the making in Serie A?
So I didn't even want to put the part praising you, because I think people who know me is I try not to take victory laps, because I've had a lot of bad takes as well. But in any event, I appreciate the shot out there. So let's begin by saying that Milinkovic-Savic really is pretty unique and really pretty unbelievable. So the names that I'm going to mention, I mean, these are the ones that I could come up with, but it's going to be hard to kind of match Milinkovic-Savic, because he really passes all the tests when you're trying to figure out who the next superstar is. So they don't play the same role, but one player that I am really sky high in going into next season, there are some health concerns, but I think this guy could really be dominating in Serie A, is Napoli striker Milik, a very highly rated from Ajax. When he first arrived at Napoli, did really, really well, then had the injuries, Mertens took over for him, but I think Milik is ready to be the main guy at Napoli. We'll get into it a little bit more later in the show, but it looks like Sarri is staying. I could see Milik just having a monster season for Napoli, so I think he's going to be the new breakout star in Serie A. If we're looking at players that play a little bit more of the Milinkovic-Savic role in the midfield, I think almost every single guest we've had on the podcast, when I ask him about some players in Serie A that impressed them, I think every single one has mentioned Sampdoria midfielder Torreira. Now, he's pretty different than Milinkovic-Savic. If anything, just in height alone, Torreira's really pretty short. But he's kind of like a Verratti-type playmaker, very exciting player. I think he's going to be sold this summer, will be an intriguing player. Two other guys on Napoli to look in the midfield, Diarra, who everyone remembers when he played against Real Madrid in the Champions League, was really impressive. You could say he probably took a step back this season, but if Jorginho goes, Maybe Diarra really breaks out an intriguing player. And also Zielinski, who I thought did really well this season coming off the bench for Napoli, are those to look. So those are the main ones. If you want some deep, deep sleepers, and these won't be superstars anytime soon, but could be intriguing players down the road. We've talked about Atalanta striker Barrow quite a bit in recent weeks. And another one who we've never mentioned on the podcast, I think maybe Adam Digby mentioned him once, is Torino offensive winger Simone Edra. He's born in 97, very intriguing player. I'd like to see Torino give him a bigger shot. So if you put gun to the head, my pick for the next superstar is going to be Milik, but never underestimate Italian sporting directors. I'm sure there'll be some guys coming to Serie A this season who will really impress us throughout the year.
All right, write those ones down, folks. All right, next Twitter question. Which Serie A club has the biggest margin for improvement next season?
So people praise me for my take on Milinkovic-Savic. Remember when I said that Roma should blow it up and just rebuild? I think I really jinxed them, but in a positive way. It has to be Roma because their financial outlook is so much better because of their run in the Champions League. Schick has done well at the end of the season, but really didn't live up to his price tag. Karsdorp was another exciting addition that didn't play because of injuries. So you can expect them likely to do better. They're in a better financial position. They probably won't have to give up any big names. So they have to be the club really with the best outlook, not to mention that they might also get a new stadium in the next few years.
All right, David, is it really true that Kwadwo Asamoah took a medical with Inter despite his public denials about it?
So I got to say, man, all these tweets on, oh, this player said that, this coach said that, this manager said that, this president said that on transfers. I mean, this feels like 2016 to me all over again. Come on, guys. By now, you should know that this stuff matters so little. If we went by public statements, Pogba would still be our Juve. Remember with our friends from Italian Football TV, literally had him sign a ball saying, I'm staying at Juve, week after he's in Manchester. Roma denied a million times that Salah was leaving. Guess what? He might win a Ballon d'Or at Liverpool. If we went by public quotes, Manchester United fans would still be falling asleep watching Van Gaal coaching the team. Okay, maybe the first part is still true, but Van Gaal is gone. So please, guys, let's not go with these public statements. Put yourself in Asamoah's shoes. Di Marzio, other really reliable people said that he took a medical for Inter. We've linked him to Inter for months. Do you really think Asamoah is going to say, yeah, I took a medical for Inter right before he's about to celebrate a Scudetto with Juve this weekend? Of course not. It's common sense. These public statements don't mean much. They're either used to manipulate a situation or just because you don't want to get stuff out there. So unfortunately for Juve, and I think Asamoah is a big loss because I thought he was quite good this season, better than Alexandre, at least for this season, is a big loss, but I fully expect him to be at Inter. But come on, guys, please do me a favor. Don't put so much credence in what players say.
All right. All right, David. Next Twitter question while you catch your breath. What will Juventus do at the wingback position this summer?
So obviously this is very interesting because there was the news that Spinazzola, the player that all last summer Chelsea fans were always looking to see what happens with Spinazzola because they're like, oh, if he goes back to Juve from Atalanta, that must mean that it frees Alexandro. That never ended up happening. But now Spinazzola is due to come back to Juve at the end of the season. But the wrinkle is he got hurt. At first it didn't look like a serious injury, but it really impacted his ACL. He'll be out for a while. So a lot of Juve fans were like, oh, maybe we should just sign Asamoah on a one-year deal and keep him. But guess what? Asamoah had a really good offer from Inter, multi-year deal, paid like a top starter at Juve. I can't imagine him reneging on the deal with Inter because of what happened with Spinazzola, also because his agents have a great relationship with Inter. Handanovic and Kandreva are with Asamoah's group, and they're already at Inter. So there's going to be a lot of changes at Juve at the wing-back position. I think you're going to see a little bit how we saw with the offensive wingers in recent years, like Juve really changing that. I think you'll see that at the wing-back position. Very likely that Darmian will return to Serie A from Manchester United and join Juve. We've seen them linked to PSV wing-back Arias, so I'm sure, Alex, you're pretty familiar with that. And again, what's interesting is Juve denied that Arias had come to Turin to kind of look around, get familiar with Juve fans, and Juventini were like, ah, whatever, that doesn't matter, that the club denies it, it must be legit. But when Asamoah does it, it's like, oh, no, 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 the guy said it, it can't be real. So just be consistent. On top of those two, remember, Desilio can play on both sides. He can play on the right and the left, and maybe Cuadrado becomes more of a right back, and Desilio ends up playing more on the left. So look for a lot of changes at Juve. I also wouldn't completely rule out Howitas staying, definitely not for the option to buy that Juve has against Schalke. He certainly didn't prove to be healthy enough, but it wouldn't shock me if Juve extends the loan and they keep him as an insurance policy. He's someone that has played at both right and left back. So I think you'll see a lot of changes with Juve at this position.
I can't claim that I've watched Santiago Arias for years and years, but I watched a lot of PSV this year. Really nice player. And I think, don't get sensitive, Lichtsteiner, Juve, legend people, but I think he'd be a great replacement for Lichtsteiner. I really do. So, David, staying on the old lady, is Juve looking to offload Gonzalo Higuain to bring Alvaro Morata back?
I've seen a lot of this, and this is really odd to me, because A, I just don't see Juve selling Higuain. For one, he costs an enormous amount of money, makes huge wages. Those of you who are familiar with transfers, all these players have a big book value, so some club would have to pay a ton to bring Higuain. And I just think Higuain's very happy at Juve. I think he's really fit into the club really well. But I could see Morata replacing Mandzukic. But Juve, as you guys know, has a lot of other priorities. We talked about the wing-back position. We talked about the midfield. So I don't see attack as really a huge priority for him. Sure, Mandzukic was valuable, but I could see if Morata wants to come back, it would probably have to be like the Cuadrado deal with Chelsea, like these two-year loans, because of the big, again, the book value that, you know, Chelsea had paid a lot for Cuadrado. They couldn't just let him go for peanuts. So it's kind of the same situation. So if Morata returns to Juve this summer, it would likely be on a two-year loan deal with an option to buy. I think, again, Juve has other priorities, but he would be an intriguing player. And I think long-term, he could be Higuain's replacement. But as it stands now, I'd be shocked if Higuain's not on Juve next season.
I feel like if it was the same deal that Cuadrado had, the two-year loan with an option to buy, just like Cuadrado, Morata would never be back at Stamford Bridge. It was very clear Cuadrado was never coming back. Yeah. It's just more semantics and details. So, hey, yeah. I wish Alvaro Morata well. I've been a little bit hard on him the second half of the season on Twitter. Of course, he plays for my team, Chelsea. But the guy really got a little overly abused by fans. And it turns out, I guess he was dealing with some injuries that, honestly, he was covering up. And I always have respect when players play through injuries. So I do wish Alvaro Morata well. So, David, moving on, if you were Monchi, would you go after Domenico Berardi or Politano?
So I know this has come up a lot. Sassuolo, you know, their director, you know, said that he wouldn't be surprised if both Berardi or Politano go on to a bigger club. And obviously, for those that know about Roma, they have a connection because Di Francesco, their manager, used to be at Sassuolo. I think Politano more likely maybe to Napoli or Milan than, say, Roma. I think Berardi could be an intriguing option for Roma. He has a close relationship with Di Francesco. Berardi has had a very difficult season, but he's still only 23. I just don't know how well he'd react to all the pressure with Roma. But talent-wise, if I had to take the two, I'd take a flyer on Berardi. I think Politano has been really, really good this season, but I still think Berardi has more upside.
I used to send you Twitter questions, David, years ago, 3-4 years ago, and I was asking about Berardi. So, boy, has it been a long time for him on Sassuolo. But as you said, he's still young, so who knows. Moving on, let's go to Super Mario. Would Super Mario Balotelli be a good fit at Roma?
I think so, very much so. And I have forgot that actually he had played with Zeko at Manchester City, and they both had a really good season together. I think it was Balo's best season in the Premier League was playing with Zeko. And I think for Roma, you know, from what I understand, Balotelli can leave Nice for just $10 million. He's 28 years old. You'd get a really good striker, a lot of potential. It seemed there's less baggage with Super Mario. You can get a player like that for $10 million that fits in already well with Dzeko. He can be his long-term replacement. On top of that, Balotelli's agent, Mino Raiola, has a pretty good relationship with Roma. He had basically negotiated the transfer originally that brought Manolas to Roma. So there's a lot there. The only wrinkle there, and I mentioned him earlier, is Schick. Like, if Balotelli comes, where does that really leave Schick? Again, Roma invested a lot in him, but taking Schick out of the equation, this makes a lot of sense to me. I'd kind of like to see that. I think that would be a nice match.
All right, well, staying on Super Mario, David, why do you think Milan aren't in for Balotelli, given the problems they face at the striker position?
I can hear a lot of Milan fans just screaming because of Mino Raiola. Of course, the Donnarumma mess with Milan. Now, I'm going to tell you, I find that stuff a little bit overrated. I do think, push comes to shove, Milan would have no problem doing deals with Raiola. Keep in mind, Donnarumma isn't the only player, the Milan player that Raiola represents. There's also Bonaventura. So I don't know how much of a factor it is, but I will say, if you think of like the top teams in Serie A, the one that could use Balotelli the most is Milan. But maybe if this would be his third time on the clubs, a little bit too much. So the easy answer is Raiola, but maybe it's not as big a factor as a lot of people think. Maybe they really believe in Cutrone, and there seems to be, again, a more interest in Belotti. So let's see how that goes. But I actually, you know, I've said it that I like to see Mario at Roma. Milan would also be a good spot for him, no doubt.
All right, David, this next question, I can say a lot of my fellow Chelsea fans on Twitter are really sweating about. What is the latest on Maurizio Sarri's status at Napoli?
So even if today you just looked at Napoli's official Twitter account, they had the team dinners, a lot of pictures of Sarri, and there was a very nice shot of Sarri with President De Laurentiis. If you want to be a conspiracy theorist, that was a kind of a clear sign that he's staying. On top of that, even Di Marzio on our site quoted a report in Naples from a trusted reporter there that said it looks like really everything points to Sarri staying at Napoli. His wages are going to go up considerably. Now, keep in mind, Sarri's exit clause expires next week. It's $8 million. A club would have to pay it to sign him. So let's just look at Chelsea's perspective. Not only would you have to pay Sarri's exit clause, you also have to pay off Conte, who has that clause if he's sacked. So I think Sarri is going to ultimately end up staying at Napoli. Me, as a fan of Serie A, and really enjoyed watching Sarri there. I'm very happy to see it. So at this point, my guess is Sarri staying. You know, but what is interesting about this is let's see how this impacts Jorginho and Koulibaly. Those are really his two probably favorite players on the squad. I'd be very interested to see if Sarri wanted a guarantee that both of them are staying to stay at Napoli as well.
All right, very interesting. Okay, next Twitter question. Is Juventus's continued success bad for Serie A's appeal?
Long and short of it, I think yes. And look, you know, I know Juve fans hate that, and of course it's their prerogative. They should want Juve to keep winning the title. I totally respect that. But aside for Juve fans, if you're just a fan of Serie A, to me, this was really a great opportunity for the league. I think a lot of people watched it because it was the only league that had a title race, you know, deep into the season. A lot of exciting storylines. Of course, everyone wants to see Milinkovic-Savic and the big names. But for me, this season was really an opportunity to completely change the way Serie A is perceived. Say Napoli had won the title playing a nice offensive style the way that they do, you'd end Juve's dominance in Serie A and you'd have it with a team that plays really well. That really helps against the perception that Serie A is boring and defensive to have a team like Napoli win it, in addition to having that happen the same year that Roma makes a deep run in the Champions League. So I think, you know, if you're a complete neutral and look at the league from the outside, this would have been really a perfect opportunity for all that. So yeah, I think in a way you could say that Juve's dominance hurts a little bit the appeal of Serie A, but at the same time, I think, you know, Juve deserves a lot of credit for the way they are managed. I think they also kind of set the blueprint for a lot of Serie A clubs on what you need to do to kind of get to the next level.
All right. This is our last Twitter question like we normally do. Let's move away from football. David, what is your favorite David Fincher movie?
Thanks for this question. I've been really fired up today, so I needed to kind of unwind with this one. So this was interesting because I'm a movie buff. I'm really into it, but I had forgotten how many good movies David Fincher did. So I was just looking at his IMDb page. I'm going to mention the movies that stood out to me. Of course, The Social Network. We had Seven, Zodiac, Benjamin Button, Gone Girl, Fight Club, so many movies to pick from. So really impressive slate of movies. I'm going to give you a couple that I think are really good. Long and short of it, for me, out of these, the best one, probably The Social Network, I think is just and that's the movie on Facebook. I think it's such a powerful movie, so well done. Really terrific. Another one that's really underrated, and this is one of his movies from the 90s, is The Game. And this is a movie that stars Sean Penn and Michael Douglas. Really good thriller. I definitely recommend it. I think that's a really underrated one. And while we're on the topic of Fincher, what I really like about him as a director is obviously his movies are really entertaining. There's a lot of suspense, but his use of music is fantastic. I love Fight Club, the book. I think the movie was pretty good. I think if you've read the book is probably better. But the way Fincher used the Pixies' most famous song, Where Is My Mind, and the last scene of Fight Club is absolutely breathtaking. I can't think of a movie using a song in a better way. There's been a lot of other examples, but that one is as good as it gets. And finally, I also want to give a shout out to Trent Reznor, the mind behind Nine Inch Nails. He's done quite a few movies with David Fincher. The soundtrack to Social Network and Gone Girl are terrific. And today we're recording this on Thursday. It's Trent Reznor's birthday, so happy birthday to him. David Fincher, really an amazing director. Definitely check him out. If you're not familiar with him, I'd start with The Game, Social Network. I know there's a lot of people that actually consider Zodiac to be one of the best movies from the past 10 years. There's definitely a lot to it. Very interesting. So I love these questions on movies and music, so please keep them coming. Here's my reminder to all of our listeners. We really appreciate the support. We're going to cover the transfer window a lot this summer. We're going to go to 3 episodes a week. Alex and I are going to put in a ton of work to keep you informed and entertained, so please help the podcast grow. Subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a rating. Takes literally 2 seconds. If you're listening to us, leave us a 5-star rating. You want to leave a comment, we appreciate it. If you listen on Android, subscribe. Just spread the word on the podcast. We rely on you guys to be our marketing department, and we really appreciate it. So with that out of the way, we're going to close with the Lazio perspective on the big match. If you want to hear more about Milinkovic-Savic, at the end of the interview, we get into it with our dear friend Sean McIntosh. Okay, so the big match this weekend in Serie A is almost a playoff match between Lazio and Inter for the remaining Champions League spot in Serie A. It's been such a crazy and fantastic season for Italian football that it's fitting that would end this way. On Monday, we had our dear friend Andrew Barker to hear more of the Inter side of things for this match, and tonight to get the Lazio perspective, we are joined by a great friend of the show, Sean McIntosh. We've had him on before. He is the president of the Texas Laziali fan club. At the moment, he's still the director at sales at the Houston Dynamo. He has an exciting career move happening soon, but right now he's calling us from Houston. So, Sean, it's a real pleasure to have you back on. Welcome back to Cultureland.
Well, the pleasure is always mine. Really, appreciate you and Alex having me on and excited to talk about this huge match coming up.
Absolutely. There's a lot of intriguing storylines to get to. But let's take a step back, because I think overall this has been a very exciting season for Lazio. I think a lot of our listeners are familiar with the individual performances, because there have been quite a few really exciting players on Lazio this season. But I think overall, you know, this has been a very successful season, at least from my perspective on Lazio. So let me ask you, let's say hypothetically last September I would have told you that Lazio is going into the final match of the season with a Champions League spot at stake. They're playing at home. Would you have considered the season a success if I presented it to you that way?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. So I'm going to answer that in two ways. So the simple answer is yes. You know, take me back to September Most preseason predictions actually had Lazio finishing anywhere between 7th and 9th. A lot of people taking AC Milan, Inter, mm-hmm. even a lot of folks having Atalanta ahead of them. Lazio had a pretty topsy-turvy offseason, losing players like Keita, Balde, Biglia. They lost Wesley Hutt without a replacement. And while you know the signing of Lucas Leiva was certainly applauded, he's exceeded expectations.
For sure.
He's brought a ton more than what I thought Biglia did as a leader. There was no way to predict that Luis Alberto would turn into the magician that we see.
Yeah.
So, you know, really going back and looking at this, the opportunity to not just make Champions League, but to do it against a big club like Inter, only needing a draw, the simple going back, yes. I would look at that as a success. But, you know, I say all that to say you can't take away the narrative and the story. And, you know, it has been an up and down season for them. And, you know, I'd say about Lazio, you can never count them out. But at the same time, you can't necessarily always count on them to do what you need them to do. And, you know, the disappointment against Atalanta and then against Crotone after Inter gave us a glorious opportunity to essentially null and void this last match, and Lazio fell short. So those things happened, and unfortunately it has me feeling a little bit frustrated. But yes, going back into the off season, I would have taken this in a heartbeat.
I agree with a lot of what you're saying. It's interesting that you mentioned a lot of people expected a lot from Milan. Atalanta was kind of the darling team for the mid-table ones. At my house, it's an August tradition that I get bullish on Lazio, but that's just me. I've always kind of had an affinity for the club. So very good analysis there. So as you mentioned, Lazio just needs a draw in this match. They're at home. It's going to be a packed Olimpico. They have a big home field advantage. So there's that, but there's also a lot of injuries for Lazio. They're really kind of getting to this match in a rough shape. So I was looking what's going on this morning, and it looks like Immobile will probably start. Parolo is pretty hurt. Luis Alberto would likely be out. But let's talk about the impact of these players. So let me put it to you this way. If you could have just one between Immobile and Luis Alberto for the match, which one of the two would you have and why?
So I don't want this to come off as a slight to Luis Alberto because he is a fantastic, fantastic, impactful player, but I don't even think it's close. And the answer has to be Immobile. You know, you and I have actually talked about this before, but you know, if Chiro was to get injured this season, or even out of form, Lazio was going to feel it in a really bad way.
Yeah.
And we've seen that. The biggest factor to this question comes down to the gap between both of these players and their replacements. And while Luis has been fantastic, Felipe Anderson slides in nicely into his role. And, you know, Anderson has a tendency to disappear sometimes in big matches, but he also can shine in a really big way. And you know, he can make an impact. Unfortunately, Immobile's backup, Caicedo, he's just not good enough. He's not good enough to carry Chito's jockstrap, let alone the scoring load. And we've seen that. And when he's in the match, he can do some things, but it feels like we're playing 10-11. And, you know, it's that lack of depth at that striker position that makes it easy to say we need Chiro. I would take a one-legged Chiro because he creates, he tends to finish. And if anything, this absence and seeing the lack of performances by Caicedo, my hope is that it's waking Lotito and Tare up to recognize there has been a lack of depth to hopefully make that change in the transfer window. But it does look as if we will get Chiro. Now, how good he is and how in form and ready to play is the big question.
Very interesting take there. I do agree with you there. On the bright side, it looks like you are getting your wish because, yeah, the drop-off and the backups is definitely very obvious there. So now, not like this match doesn't lack juicy storylines in and of its own, but on top of what's going on the pitch, we have the DeVry dilemma. So for those of you that aren't too familiar with this, this is really a fascinating scenario. Maybe not so fascinating for Sean, who's a Lazio fan, but DeVry now, the cat's out of the bag. He'll be on Inter next season. They deposited his contract. The reason they could do that is his contract with Lazio is expiring. You can do that after February. I think everyone involved, maybe not so much Inter, would have preferred that this remain kind of confidential, but the news leaked. So we're going into the final match of the season with DeVry. You know, you have to wonder who his allegiance is going to be. I think Simone Inzaghi is a little bit on the fence on what to do with him. I thought he played quite well against Crotone, but that's one thing against Crotone, a whole other to play against your next team with so much at stake. So let me get your take on this dilemma, and you want to see DeVry play against Inter?
Oh, boy, this dilemma is so perfectly said, yeah, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's got everything. And I really see it as a little gamesmanship from Inter. You know, this scenario, it's perfect for them, but it creates the distractions for Lazio. And as far as whether or not DeVry should or shouldn't play, that's a tough decision. You know, we as fans from the outside, we have our opinions. But at the end of the day, Coach Inzaghi and DeVry, they've got their relationship. And it's going to be on the coach to know his player best. I think, you know, going back to the Crotone match, DeVry was one of the best players on the pitch. He was responsible for a goal line clearance. You know, there was no indication that he wasn't all in.
Yeah.
But if he has any concern, even the slightest, you know, Inzaghi just can't play him. You know, the way I try to look at it is you know, I take a little bit of a psychological approach, and I try to put myself in DeVry's shoes. I believe he will be a professional about it. I believe that in the moment and on the pitch, he will give maximum effort for Lazio. But, you know, again, taking myself in the situation, if you have ever put in your 2 weeks for an organization, even the best employee is going to be distracted and have a little bit of a split focus, you know, with the attention and with their heart being mixed between the present and the future. And I think this is what DeVry may be dealing with. You know, on the pitch, you're going to be relying on instinct. But I think his training leading up to the match may be affected. And as we know, 90% of the game is mental. And I just don't know if leading up to this match, he can focus at 100%. But I believe that's going to be a personal decision between DeVry and Inzaghi. And if there is even the slightest, I think Inzaghi owes it to the club and even owes it to DeVry, because DeVry is going to be in a difficult situation. He can either be a hero for Lazio and go to Inter as a hated man, or he can make a mistake and forever carry this and Laziali give him a hard time. So it's a tough position for him, let alone the club.
Yeah, it's such a crazy scenario. And look, you know, I've had a passion for transfers ever since I was a young kid. I'm sure something similar has happened, but I can't think off the top of my head something so really crazy.
Yeah,
the last
with so
moment.
Much at stake.
It's so much at stake. So, Sean, I'm going to be honest with you. I have a strong sympathy for Lazio, but between the injuries and all, earlier in the podcast, me and my friend Thousand both picked Inter. It was kind of tough. I was really on the fence with this, but with all the drama and the injuries, I felt like in a way Inter was almost a safer pick, but I don't feel very confident about this. So, you know, you bring us now the Lazio perspective, and what do you think is going to happen in this match?
So I try to be as partial as possible and not take too much bias. And I know that's difficult because I do love Lazio, but this is one of those matches that is so tough to predict. And that difficulty to predict this match comes with the fact that both of these teams seem to underperform or overperform in moments that you don't expect them to. So, you know, Lazio is, I believe Lazio at full strength is the better team. But that's not the story here, and they are going to be without players. Both have a history of taking fan bases on a roller coaster ride. I expect a little bit of that. My gut tells me a 1-1 draw. I believe, or I think, pure guess really, but I have a feeling that Inter will start off fast, score, and Lazio will fight back. I would venture to guess a Chido goal to take the Capocannoniere and see them go into Champions League off about 1 point needed.
Yeah, I know this was difficult for you. It's really, really a crazy scenario. And look, I'm with you. I think Lazio is a better team overall at full strength. But, yeah, there's definitely a lot going on there. So, listen, I can't have anyone on this podcast coming on to talk about Lazio and not ask about Milinkovic-Savic. I got to give my listeners what they want. So you gave us your take on him in the past. Tell me what you've seen from Milinkovic-Savic in the past month or so since we've had you on the podcast.
The man we all love to talk about. I mean, look, talk about stepping up. You know, he's absolutely done that. The numbers that it continue to be associated with his potential sale, I think he's justified that lofty price tag in the past few matches. He's had 3 goals in the last 4 matches, all critical, all absolutely crucial to keeping their Champions League dream alive. He's coming into this match with 12 goals on the year. That actually leads all Serie A midfielders in scoring for the campaign. And as we know, you know, he does so much more than just scoring. And what I'd love to see is without Chido, without Luis Alberto, without Parolo, he has had to step up. And for such a young player to actually do that in a moment where it has been required says so much to me about the type of quality he has. I know it's a team effort. There's been a lot from Lucas Leiva and other players, but, you know, I'd say he is the biggest reason why Lazio is even still in a position to qualify. And again, for a player of his quality at that age to not only do it when it's easy, but to do it when it has had to come from him has been so impressive to see him really thrive under that type of pressure. But, he's got one more game. It's a final. This is going to be, for him, one of the biggest matches he's ever played. I know the game is going to be on BN Sports. It's the main attraction this weekend. All the stakes on the line. It's a big club, Inter is. And, you know, I'm going to be really excited to see what he can do when eyeballs are on him in a full Olimpico. And all eyes on him and all the pressure. It's going to be exciting to see what he does.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Sean, I can't thank you enough for coming on once again. Give our best to everyone with the Texas Laziali. Please don't hold it too much against me that we picked Inter. It was really tough. But deep down in a lot of ways, I'm probably rooting to be wrong on that one. So thanks again for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you on Calcioland.
Thank you, David, and thank you, Alex. You guys are doing great stuff, and let's see what happens this weekend. It'll be exciting for all Calcio fans.